Welcome to the Profit Cash Growth Podcast. This is the podcast for six and seven figure business owners who are looking to grow a financially successful business. My co-host, Claire Hancock, is a finance director, chartered accountant, and entrepreneur. And every week, I'll be exploring guidance and frameworks designed to help you increase your profits, improve your cash flow, and grow your business. This week on the podcast, why my favourite food establishment has made the news this week, and we deep dive into cash flow and cash flow cycles and everything you can do to better manage them in your business. So this week, Claire, you're a little under the weather, aren't you?
Yeah, unfortunately. So I do apologise if I don't sound my normal perky self, but I'm feeling okay. I just don't sound okay. So do bear with me.
Yeah, I've just asked you to step away from the mic a little bit so you can hear less of the coughing and spluttering that goes on this week. But
it's that time of year though, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And I'm trying to hold it back. I've got a bit of a sore throat. I think I've caught it off you, but let's see how the week goes.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've just got a bit of a sore throat and a cold, but you're definitely looking like you could have a dose of the fatal man flu. So
right, let's move on. Let's do this week's news story. So this week in the news, I want to talk about one of my favourite businesses because I frequent it very often. It's Greggs. Yes, the high street favourite of Greggs. And the headline that we're going to talk about is Greggs beats McDonald's as breakfast favourite.
I wondered how long it would take you to add Greggs into one of our podcasts. You are what I would refer to as a northern lad. You are actually from Leicester, so most people would say that's not north, but I come from the land of Hertfordshire, so anything north of Watford Gap is officially north, whereas I myself, more of a southerner, I definitely prefer Pret a Manger. But yeah, Greggs, how many times a week do you think you go there?
Since it opened in our town, three or four, definitely for breakfast. I think they're absolutely right. They beat McDonald's all day long. I mean, the quality is just better, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Greggs. I'm not going to lie.
I like go a crispy
there
baguette
because it's convenient, but they don't really serve anything that I would normally pick if I had a choice.
The great British nation disagrees with you, Claire.
It's very
because
true.
Revenues in 2023 have jumped by a fifth for Greggs. They just seem to go from strength to strength, opening more and more and more and more stores. Originally started in Newcastle and has just worked its way south, moved into travel points, airports, train stations. And they did a big deal with the what do you call them, the Isa brothers? You know, the guys that bought Asda. And owned the chain of petrol station forecourts. And they put Greggs in all of those service stations. I think they've just gone on to do very, very, very well. Just having a look here. The appetite for Greggs sausage rolls and steak bakes shows no sign of slowing down after the bakery chain dethroned McDonald's to become Britain's most popular breakfast spot. Its share of food-to-go breakfast visits increased by 19.6% last year, taking Greggs to the number one in the market and overtaking McDonald's for the first time.
What I really like about Greggs is that no matter how big it's got, it hasn't succumbed to the corporate waffle that you get with a lot of other businesses. So if you visit the Greggs website, you can see their annual report on there, which talks about their strategy and where their growth is coming from, what their plans are. But I must say, for a business of their size, it is in plain English. And any business person running, you know, like a six or seven figure business, you really should be able to understand pretty much everything that is on this annual report. So it's really interesting. One of the things I like about it is they break down what their focus for growth is, and they're focusing on four areas at the moment. Where they want to increase their sales is in evening walk-ins. So we've seen a Greggs store near us. They've started doing like big takeaway pizzas, so they sell individual pizza slices during the day, but you can get a whole box of it for evening walk-ins. Daytime deliveries, because they have only recently actually been listed on Uber Eats, so that's quite interesting. Also using the Greggs app and their evening delivery as well. So that's all in the Greggs annual statement that's published on their website. Check it out.
Yeah, they've really got into the app game as well, haven't they? I know I haven't really played with it. They give you a free coffee every so many purchases or various things like that, don't they? Like a loyalty club.
Yeah, they said that I have ordered four donuts since Christmas time, actually, which I feel like they must have definitely got me confused with another customer, because it's not like me to eat a donut, is it?
Not at all. So obviously, many, many thousands of stores. In fact, exactly 2,473 at the moment, expected to open between 140 and 160 next year. Have a guess, Claire. Do you think Greggs was an overnight success? What year do you think it started as a bakery in Tyneside?
You know, I've read the book on this, and yes, it literally started as a small family-run business with somebody selling loaves of bread from a bicycle.
Correct.
Fascinating story. And it talks about the challenges that they had with it being a family-owned business as more family got involved with different roles and things like that. So it's a really fascinating insight into the operations of a, and the dynamics, the political dynamics in a family business are certainly more challenging than you could ever imagine. But yeah, what was it? Was it 1940 something?
Very 1939.
Oh, I thought it was after the war, not
yeah,
before.
Coming out. It's interesting how many big businesses sort of started at that sort of post Great Depression era and coming out of that, and you know, economies were booming. Do you think in 5-10 years time, as we come out of the difficulties we've been through in the last 6 or 7 years, that we're going to suddenly be booming ahead and businesses are going to be moving forward? Or
well, I think if we have another world war, then yeah, definitely we will boom out the other side. But I think unfortunately we're going to trundle along being miserable, poor
British
and ungrateful for another probably 50 years or so. But yeah, one of the reasons why I really like Greggs as a business model is they know what they do best. Like, they know that they are bakers. They haven't got ideas above their station and try to do things that are not within their skill set. They have just stuck to what they know, and that is making good bakery products.
Yeah. Not yet either. I mean, people like McDonald's and various things, they strayed into other areas over time, and maybe pressures mean that they will do that over time, but you know, we're then pushing towards 100 years now and they are still very much a baker, but they're hitting that breakfast market, they're hitting that lunch market really, really nicely. So the headlines were all about just how well they're doing. Obviously, profits rose 27% last year to £188 million before tax, up from £148 in 2022. So yeah, just they're just going and going and going and going. I think they have a total share of the food to go market of 8.2%, rising from 7.7%. It's just a huge percentage of people. If you think the food to go market must be absolutely enormous in the UK, to have 8% of that must just be an incredible achievement.
And to overtake a company like McDonald's, I mean, your obsession is with Greggs, but my obsession is more with McDonald's. I don't particularly enjoy the food, but I'm obsessed with McDonald's, the business model. I think it's epic. But to overtake somebody like them is, you know, a massive global giant is quite some undertaking for what is essentially a small British grown business. So I think the whole Greggs team should be incredibly proud of what they've achieved. One of the things why I really like businesses like Greggs is because they actually, despite their size, they won't have particular cash flow struggles, because if you think about their business model, they're buying mostly fresh products, which they can't keep for very long because they will have a shelf life, and their customers all pay cash up front. So from a cash flow perspective, actually bakery models are quite good,
sustainable,
sustainable from a cash flow perspective. The challenge is managing waste and making sure that you don't run out of product, because then of course it affects your sales. So if you can get that balance right, which of course Greggs has now got super fancy computer systems to predict demand, then it's a really, really great business model.
Do you know the average Greggs store turns over between £500,000 and £1 million a year?
God, it's staggering, isn't it?
Little shop on the high street, amazing.
In my mind, I feel like if that was a local bakery, I'd be saying that's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
In fact, I did a little bit of work with a bakery client, and they were turning over that across multiple sites. I think they had 3 different sites and they were turning that over. So to do that on a high street bakery is good. However, it makes me think, is it good enough for Greggs, and what more could they do to increase that?
Do you think they'll go heavy international once they've saturated the UK market? A bit like McDonald's, or?
Oh, I don't know. I struggle to see where in Europe there would be so much demand for a steak bake. So
it's a very British thing. You are right. But
So I think it wouldn't be the Greggs that we have come
in
to know and love.
In the way we know it, yeah.
But when you're that size, your value is not necessarily in your skills of baking anymore. It's in the way that you run your operations and the way that you can market and attract customers. So, you know, yes, they could replicate that across Europe, but it wouldn't be the British Greggs that we know.
Great. Well, I'm sure it won't be the last time that I mention one of my favourite eateries on this podcast. But for now, this week's news story, Greggs roaring ahead. Well done, Greggs. So in this week's deep dive, we're going to talk about cash flow. And cash flow is one of the most important things and one of the most emotionally driven things in businesses that we speak to. And you're going to talk to me a little bit about cash flow cycles. What are they? What should businesses be looking out for? And how does it differ by industry? Talk to me, Claire.
Yeah, so working capital cycle. Now, I have spent years working in finance, particularly at manufacturing, distribution and retail businesses that in particular hold a lot of stock. And when you are a stock-based business, it amplifies your cash flow worries more than you could ever imagine, because every penny that you have in your warehouse is a penny that is not in your bank account. And that's why cash flow is so, so challenging in any business that holds stock.
We had this conversation the other day as we were driving past an Amazon warehouse where something suddenly dawned on me. I mean, we deal with so many small businesses, and when we come across stock businesses where, you know, they're holding, I don't know, 150 different lines that they need to keep available at any given time. And then suddenly I just thought, this is just unbelievable. Like the cash tied up in something like Amazon, just to have, you know, I said, how many SKUs do you think that they have? And I don't think you could even know, could you? It'd be tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. I mean, you can get anything on Amazon. It is just the world's most diverse retailer. So yeah, scary. It would scare me to manage to have that kind of cash tied up in my business.
Yeah, I mean, of course, a lot of the stock that Amazon has in their warehouse isn't their stock. It's because they're doing fulfillment for other customers. So they are holding a lot of stock that belongs to other people. But yeah, a lot of Amazon processes will be just in time. So that means they will be ordering and getting it delivered directly from their supplier. And it probably will be what's known as cross-stocking, where you ship it out the same day. It probably won't even ever go on a product shelf.
Presumably they would, with the power that they have now, presumably they would have the power to operate under some sort of, like I say, no sale, no fee thing, or they're not really buying the stock. I bet they push that back to the supplier, don't they, as a supplier's problem?
Yeah, so there are a couple of ways that you can do that. So it's known as consignment stock or bonded stock. There are some other terminology for it as well. But essentially, you could have stock in your warehouse, but you only pay for the stock that you sell. So that's one option. So essentially, your supplier would give you, you know, potentially 100K of free stock.
Yep.
And you only get invoiced for it as it leaves your warehouse and you sold it. So that is a big help from your cash flow perspective. Or the other options are around maximizing payment terms with your suppliers, making sure that you've got obsolescence agreements with your customers where you can return product if it's not sold, all of those types of things.
What's an obsolescence agreement?
So also sometimes called like a stock cleanse agreement. So you might agree with a supplier that you'll hold a certain amount of stock, but you have the right to return it if it's not sold within, say, 6 months. So you'd normally have like a quarterly or annual stock cleanse, and you would go through your warehouse. And if you think they're slow moving lines and you've got a risk of them becoming obsolete and you not being able to sell them, then you can return them for free to your supplier.
So no sale, no fee is effectively the model. It's a bit like when I used to work in the newspaper game, all newspapers are provided to retailers on a no sale, no fee basis. They sell what they sell that day and then they pay for what they've sold, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So the two key ways of doing it are no sale, no fee. That's more like a bonded stock or consignment stock arrangement. And then no sale free returns.
Okay.
Yeah. That's different. Free returns helps to manage your obsolescence, but of course you've still had to pay for the stock up front. So from a cash flow perspective, that won't offer you much help.
So really mastering these working capital cycles, what are the type of industries and businesses that this is most important for?
Yeah,
that are at the most danger?
So the working capital cycle, what it gives you an overview of is it tells you in days, the amount of days that it takes you to convert your stock into cash in your bank from your customers. So it's really, really powerful because it says if you were to start your business from scratch today, how long do you have to wait until somebody pays you?
Yeah.
And so when you know what those days are, you can therefore do some quick calculations in your mind when you're thinking about potentially increasing your stock levels or growing your business. You can do some quick calculations and say, okay, well, I know that I've got to fund my business for 30 days before I can get any money in, for example.
Sure. And that wraps back into how people then actually go about funding that and all the different methods they can do to fund that cash flow gap.
Yeah, absolutely. So the three key numbers that go into a working capital cycle are around your stock. So how long it takes you to convert your stock to cash, your stock to sales. your debtors, which is how long it takes you to convert your sales to cash in your bank. And then the third element that goes into that calculation is your payables. So it's how much credit terms you get from your suppliers.
And so this is almost like a finance funnel. In my sales world, you're kind of working through this finance funnel from spending the money to getting the money back and all of these key metrics through the funnel that you should be, as a business owner, putting metrics in place to track.
Yeah, absolutely. Because in a perfect world, if you think about receiving stock in your warehouse, you would want to receive stock in your warehouse on day one.
Yeah.
Ideally, ship it on day one and get your customer to pay you no later than day 30. And then if you are not paying your supplier until day 60, then you've essentially had a positive cash flow in your business because you're not paying your supplier until after your customer's paid you.
Sure.
But in reality, what we find in a lot of businesses is that they're holding stock. I've got a meeting this afternoon with a retail business and I've identified that they're holding their stock on average for 200 days before they sell it, which is just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
You think about scaling that up, how much cash flow that's going to need to support that business. So
why are they holding it for that long?
They have a bookkeeper that is supposedly providing the monthly management accounts. They have come to me for a free finance review. So it's an offer that I ran last month where I'll have a look at your finances for you and give you some ideas on where there are opportunities or potentially issues in your business. So they came to me through that. I've done a free review for them. And quite honestly, I have no idea what they're paying their bookkeeper for. They seem to be getting a VAT return and nothing else for it because it's just absolute gobbledygook in their finance system and their stock is in a right mess. And they don't have the information being provided to them by their bookkeeper to know that.
So how would somebody who's listening who's thinking, right, I've got a stock business and this is, you know, understanding the cash flow cycle is one of my challenges. How should they go about sort of getting a handle on it? How do they build the tools? Is there a specialist out there they can go to who will help them through this part? Because it's starting to sound, you know, for myself, you know, I treat the front end, the sales side, you know, in the same way that it sounds like these type of businesses are at high risk, should be treating this end as seriously because it's going to put them out of business if they're not on their numbers.
Yeah, when you have a business like this, it's very, very challenging. I think the first step is to get into the numbers, understand your working capital cycle, which you can do by watching the YouTube video.
This is one of the few subjects that probably is easier to digest via the YouTube video because it's quite visual, isn't it? And you've got some good examples on your whiteboard to go through there as well.
And it sounds complicated because I've probably just rattled off four terms that you don't understand. I've said working capital cycle, I've said debtor days, I've said creditor days, and I've said stock days. So that might be four terms that as a business owner, you might not be familiar with. But when you watch the video, you'll see that they are incredibly easy to calculate from information that is in your bookkeeping system. So if you use like Xero or Sage or something like that, then all of these numbers you can literally just pull right out of the system, plug into a very simple calculation, and it will give you your working capital cycle. So that's the first thing to do, is to do that, calculate those four numbers, because you can then start to look at those numbers and look at how they're working with each other and do the numbers make sense. Like, for example, if you're paying your suppliers within 30 days, but your customers are not paying you till 90 days, then that is obviously going to be a cash flow issue in your business because you're paying your suppliers before your customers pay you. So you can then identify that there's an issue there and you can take some steps to remedy that. So having those numbers is always, always the first step.
Great. Fascinating. Well, if you've got any questions for Claire about working capital cycles, I mean, first of all, jump on the YouTube, have a look at the video that she put out a few weeks ago, because that brings it to life. But please drop an email, claire@profitcashgrowth.com. If you've got any questions or you'd like us to cover any parts of working capital cash flow cycles in more depth in the podcast or on the YouTube videos, I'm sure Claire would be delighted to go into more depth in that at any time.
Yeah, and I mentioned that I did a free business review for this customer that I'm meeting with later today. But by all means, if anybody else is interested in that, check out my Facebook page. You can see some more information on there or drop me an email at claire@profitcashgrowth.com.
Great. And let's move on to Profit Cash Growth Extra. So my Profit Cash Growth Extra this week is a fabulous business book that I read quite early on in my time as an entrepreneur. It's a book called The E-Myth by Michael E. G- Gerber, as I believe. And very, 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 very interesting. If you're a if you're at the early stage of your journey, or even further on in your journey, and you're just wrestling with understanding how you should be moving as a business owner through the various skill sets of a growing business, the E-Myth really it really brings it to life in plain language. Listen to it on an audiobook, listen to it or read it in text format. But I think it really breaks down in a really easy way, you know, the type of things you should be doing as an entrepreneur to change the way that you interact in your business at different stages in order to make sure that you yourself are serving the business for the best of its growth. You've read it, haven't you, Claire?
I really love the E-Myth. I think that if somebody had to say the best business book you've ever read, it would be the E-Myth. I think it's this concept that, you know, just because you are a good web developer doesn't mean that you should go and set up a website doing web development and sell your services. Because actually, if you're any good at doing web developing, then you will eventually have employees that do that. And what you're left with is the skill set of running a business. And unfortunately, there's not really a school you can go to that teaches you how to run a business. You can go to university and do various degrees and stuff that teach you how to run a corporate company.
That's why we exist, isn't it, Claire?
Well, that is true. That is what we aim to help small business owners with. But
there is not a course that teaches you on parenting, and there's not one that teaches you on being a business owner or entrepreneur. And I think the more you can absorb learnings and education from people like ourselves and many other people out there, the better. I mean, we never stop learning in all of our time. I read probably at least 10 to 15 books a year. If I can do one a month, that's great. I don't read fiction. I only read non-fiction. And I'm just constantly looking to learn. I think it's the if you listen to anybody that's successful, that's the biggest tip they'll give you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that it doesn't matter what size business owner you are. If you haven't read the E-Myth, give it a read. It's not too heavy, actually, and you should be able to rattle through it quite quickly. But I have come across business owners that are doing like millions in turnover, and they've read the E-Myth and got something out of it. So it really is for everybody.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us for another podcast and another week. We'll be back again next week with another deep dive into things that can help you to grow your business. As always, you can find Claire at profitcashgrowth.com, all the social channels, the Facebook, and do check out the YouTube channel, Face Profit Cash Growth. And we will see you again next week. Take care.